Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stayed glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in since they going back to showing Action Tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas from Tom Mattis. And this is episode 112 of The Prerogative. And on this episode, it's still February, which means we still have the overall theme of romance going. And, we're kind of combining two reviews into one, as I'll explain in just a bit, as this week we'll be looking at seasons 1 and 2 of Ai Yuri Aoshi. Of course, season 1, and then season 2, it goes under the name of NC. But technically season 2. Now, why am I doing this? Well, it just goes all back to an oopsie, to which I have to completely blame myself and myself only. This is my fault. See, back in the first week of February, I had recorded Princess Lover, and I had thought that I had posted it up. I remember uploading it to FileZilla, and I think it was one of those things where, like, you know, I'm tired, but I'll upload it in the morning. You know, I'd finish it and whatever. I think I was also, like, doing a paper at the time. I don't know, though. I can't remember. Anyways, for whatever reason, I had just forgotten. Actually, now that I think about it, and I know it's not important, I think the plan was that I did it later at night, and I was like, you know, I'll put this on a flash drive and... or I'll upload it, and then I'll post it tomorrow afternoon while, you know, I'm waiting for work. By waiting for work, I mean, you know, I get out of class early, and I have a couple hours between when I'm supposed to go into work and between that class. And so I just head immediately to my work, and I sit there, and I go on the Wi-Fi, and I do stuff like post episodes, which is something I've done in the past. And I guess for whatever reason, I think I forgot. Probably due to the fact that I was just in anger at the Wi-Fi situation, because, you know, for those who don't know, I'm in the Northeast, and we've kind of had a bit of a cold spell, and I guess Wi-Fi doesn't play well with cold, as I can attest to, because I've been frustrated by Wi-Fi all over this area that should be working and isn't, I guess, because of cold weather. Anyways, to go back to the point I was making, for whatever reason, I didn't post Princess Lover, which I did post last week. So I had meant to post Princess Lover the week before, but didn't, and only realized it when I was about to get ready to do, you know, actually do the recording for Ai Yuri Aoshi. And, so since it was there, I'm like, you know, I shouldn't do it. So I decided I'll post Princess Lover, And what I'll do is, considering it's a 13-episode season, and really that it's a more of an add-on, and really mostly just a bunch of filler episodes anyways, I decided to combine the two seasons of Eri Yuri Ayoshi. It's somewhat of a hard name to say sometimes, I guess. I initially planned on doing them as two separate episodes, because I wanted to talk about Enshi as, you know, because it is this really thing that can be separated from season one and they can be looked at together, but I decided to combine them together and talk about them the same. So in an essence, in a way, though this is one episode, you're really having two episodes combined into one. Again, I'm doing this to make up for the fact that I screwed up and I forgot to post Princess Lover. So even though we may be only getting three reviews during this month, which you are, you're getting three reviews at the same time. I guess in my mind I'm counting them as four because I'm looking at four series. And again, we'll talk about why I look at Enshi that way. Well, I think I can get it right out of the bat right here because we will be talking about it more in the review. But at some point I'm going to get the goddamn name right. Enshi, as I said before, is more filler. It's the continuation of the story. Actually, it does follow the manga kind of closely. And it's more about, hey, you know, here are all these kind of... I call it filler mostly because it's kind of like all the episodes are basically all the filler episodes that they could have done in season one, but didn't. Though, to be fair, that is a majority of what the manga is after the first time they meet at Aoi's parents. Now, here's the thing. I have actually read this manga. I have read the entire manga for a fact. So, I know a lot of this stuff is actually from the manga. Some aren't. You know, the hot... You know, season two, you have the Hot Springs episode. I don't really remember it being in the manga. I think it could have been. I can't remember completely. I mean, for the most part, this is actually follow the manga pretty close. At least season one does. And midway through the manga, they do meet with Aoi's father, and he begrudgingly gives blessings. Now, mind you, the second season was done in 2003. The manga wouldn't finish until 2005. So, the second series... That's why I say it's mostly filler, because while they are kind of taking stuff from the manga, there are some episodes that aren't. And while the Tina storyline is something from the manga, it isn't the finale of the manga itself. There is actually something more to that. I think it's Tina goes off for a bit and then comes back. But basically, the ending of the manga is a lot more serious. Not that they don't have the seriousness in the end of the second season. But, and again, I'm going much into more review territory here, but I think we can talk about it here. Because we're comparing the manga with the anime, which is always different. It's serious, but serious in a sort of more romantic way, in the loss of a friend. The manga ending is somebody comes forward claiming that they are Karu Hanabashi. You know, basically this other person that was adopted, this other child of his father, basically claims the name of Karu Hanabashi, and, you know, he's somebody who had always been jealous of Karu, and, you know, that he's now a Honja, he's not a Hanabashi, and that the marriage that was that granted between Aoi and Karu is now to him, and Karu has to fight against this other Karu to get Aoi back and everything, and it's... there's a lot more drama to it. I do have the final manga, it could be the final volume of the manga, and I've read it just, it's actually a beautiful ending. I don't want to say wins her back, but he's able to rescue her from, you know, being married to somebody she doesn't love, and, you know, they're able to complete their love, and they go back to the mansion, You know, they basically decide we are leaving both the Hinabishus and the Sakuraba's. And, you know, they go back to the mansion. Of course, the mansion had been cleared out and everybody's gone, so they're all alone. And, basically, they make love. And, you know... So they make love, and everybody comes back the day after. And of course, at that time, Tina is going off to America again for a much longer time. In fact, 4 years, because there is an epilogue to the manga. Again, by the way, spoiler alert. I probably should have said that ahead of time. I apologize. But spoiler alert. So Tina goes off, and they all kiss, you know, Hinabishi goodbye, and, you know, end with a picture. And then the epilogue is 4 years later. Tina comes back to Japan. As she goes around meeting, you know, Chika is now in college. Teiko and Miyabi are... Well, Miyabi has now been adopted by the Sakurabas, and she runs a department store owned by the Sakurabas with Teiko as, like, I guess her assistant. Ayo's in England, grown up, helping with the family business, I guess. And, of course, Ari and Karu are now living together as husband and wife. again, I kind of wanted to point all that out because how vastly different the ending of the actual manga is from the series. And you see some similarities, but again, it's one of those things to where, you know, they had ended the first season, they wanted to do the second season, but the manga was nowhere near close to ending, and they had to work something out. And, you know, that's something common, in particular anime of this type that would come out. And mind you, it still happens today as well. Though I'm glad to see you do have things like High School DxD to where they know all the things, so they're spacing the season. And I really think that's why they're spacing High School DxD out, because the light novel is only so far. So if they release a new series that covers every two volumes of the light novel, as High School DxD does, it gives the light novel time also to continue its story, so that they'll always have room to continue the story and never run out of story. But, you know, it was commonplace for, in particular in the early to mid-thousands, for anime to, you know, here's this popular manga, it's not over yet, everybody loves it, so we're gonna make an anime of it, and when we get to the point to where the manga is, we'll kind of make stuff up on our own. Ikitosen is a great example of this. In fact, I don't think the Ikitosen manga was ever finished. It got to a certain point. Really, Dragon Destiny, I think, is the last one that really follows the manga. Great Guardians and Extreme Executor are really on their own. So this is a common thing with anime. So that's why I kind of point out Enchi as filler. By no means does that mean it's bad, but it's... Again, it's more harem elements or harem focused than season one is. But I'm like, what? It's hard because usually this is stuff that I would leave for story, but I felt that was a story element I could talk about here. That way we could focus more on the plot aspect that is in both seasons. And certainly, but I think it's very interesting to look at this series in that sense, and then understand where it came from. And obviously, I have a much deeper connection because I have followed this series. I followed the manga. I don't have the entire manga. I have a couple of the first volumes, and then I have the last volume. But I have read the entire series by checking stuff out of libraries and stuff. And I have seen, obviously, I've seen both. I have the DVDs of the series. This is one of those series where I got to actually watch the DVD. So, nonetheless, I actually have a lot of room to talk about with this series. So, why don't you say we get right into the review proper, shall we? Because that was a tough segue to find, but I found it to peel back the fourth wall there. I'm sorry, that was me trying to lift here. Edwin from New York telling me to leave the fourth wall alone. Jones. Because I'm sure he's somewhere in New York and Nicole just jumped out of his house like, leave the fourth wall alone! But let's get on with our review. And of course, that means a synopsis. What is A.I.I. Yuri Hayashi? Well, our story begins with Karu Honja, who is a single college student living on his own. One day, while coming back from school, he runs into a beautiful young lady in a kimono, who's trying to find her way upon the trains of Tokyo. He just happens to be going the same way, so he helps her out. And as things turn out, she turns out to be Aoi Sakuraba, a girl from his childhood, and she has come to marry him as they had been promised to wed. And through some misunderstanding and everything, they come to realize how much Aoi has loved him all these years, and he agrees to accept her hand in marriage. But of course, since he has dropped the name of Hanabashi, this doesn't work out so well. So, to keep up appearances until at least he graduates college and be a respectable person, or at least until Aoi's father finally does give consent for the marriage, they decide to have them live in a mansion owned by the Sakurabas, where he will be a tenant and Aoi will be the landlady with her, I was about to say partner, but her attendant, I guess we'll call her, Miyabi Kagurazaki, is the manager. Of course, this also leads to other people joining the household to live there, like Tina Foster, Teiko Minazuki, her younger cousin from far away, Chika, eventually joins them. And then, of course, there's also Mayu, Miyuki, a person from Karu's past who's deeply in love with him, though much younger than him, but is in college because she's smart. Basically, all this leads to, make us wonder, will the love last? Well, we'll find out as we review Aoi Yuri Hayashi.
あらく咲いた花の香り残し季節は過ぎます雨も上がり空に雲青い風がそよいでる今日明日と
start off with the music, and of course that means we'll start off with opening and closing themes. Now, both seasons have the same aspect of, in a way, the first season has really one opening theme and one ending theme, though there is an alternate ending theme for the 18th episode called I'll Be Home by Satosuki Yukino, and it's lovely. But for the most part, the ending theme is Namo Shirenu Hana, or the Unknown Flower, by the Indigos. And the intro for the first season is Toa no Hana, or Eternal Flower, by Yoko Ishida. Again, Yoko Ishida is returning. We had witnessed her doing the opening themes, and ending themes for Ah My Goddess as well. And she's also here for the second season, and she, as Yoko does, Takamono, or translated, Treasure, which is the opening theme for the second season. And then Indigo does two ending themes for the second season. The first one is I Do, and then the second one is Presence. I'm going to start with the ending themes, because I'm going to go on and gush about Yoko Ushida's singing in both intro themes. And that's not to sit there and say that the ending themes are bad, because they're not. They're very good. It's just, again, Yoko just has such a great voice. It's just, it's hard for the Indigo, and I feel bad for them, to, outshine them. Now, the first ending theme for the first season and for the first one for the second season, both are pretty much the same. Nice, romantic, and, in particular with the second one, kind of upbeat, but kind of joyful and happy and everything. Though the one for the second ending theme that Indigo does for the second season, though, has more of that sort of a 1990s R&B feel to it. As like, when I first heard it, I'm like, am I listening to, like, All for One or Boyz II Men? Because the start of the song kind of felt that way, though you had Japanese pop singers singing it, and it was nice and lovely, and I enjoyed it. And, as I said, though, the first ending for the second season and the ending theme for the first season by Indigo had more of that sort of Japanese pop, little upbeat to it, which were typical ending themes of this time. So it's not particularly special, but, it's still lovely to listen to. But what really shines in these theme songs are Yoko Ushida's theme songs. Now, of the two, the better one is, without a doubt, Toa no Hana, or Eternal Flower, the one for the first one, which is the song you just were listening to. And you can hear exactly why it's beautiful. Oh my god, it's gushing. It's one of those great Japanese songs that have come, again, singer that have been put to an anime, and just it fit the anime perfectly, and it's just so beautiful to listen to. It's one of those songs that can make you cry. That's the sign of a great romantic song. If it can make you cry like this does, I mean, my god, there are times I'll just start bawling, because it's just the power of the song hits you just right there. The second one is a little bit more joy. It's still powerful. If I had to sit there and say the first season's intro theme by Yoko is more about just pure love, and then the one about the second season's theme, she has it being more about family, which is definitely more of a theme in that second season. And that's something definitely we can say and say is that though family is a big theme in the first season, there's more of a split between love and family, with more of a focus being on love, whereas with the second season, because it's a lot more filler and a lot more focused on those harem aspect, there is more of a focus on family. And by the way, it's just one of those things where if you were listening to the second song by itself, it's one of those things that's like perfect for an opening, because there's just about da 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 da. You can see exactly, you may have not even seen this series, but you can tell what's playing on the animation from that. So it's like just made for that. And it's a beautiful song, and it's heartwarming, and it gets you in the mood for the second season. But there's a reason that I think the first season is better than the second season, and one of the main reasons is the opening themes, because Toa no Hana is just so powerful as a song. And it sets you for the mood that you need for this series. And it's just beautiful. Like I said, it is a song that will bring you to tears. I really, if there's anybody listening to this who isn't really an anime fan and probably has no attention to probably watching this series, or, you know, just listen to this series for fun, I highly suggest go on YouTube, type in Toa no Hana, or the first opening theme for Ari Yuri Ayoshi, and just listen to this song, because I guarantee you, you will be crying tears of joy and happiness, because it's just so powerful. This song is right up there with Lena Park's song that was used for the opening theme for Romeo x Juliet, and the name's escaping me. I apologize, you know. It can be "You Raise Me Up" is the name of the song. I just remembered it. I blanked there for a second, like, you know. And if you remember me reviewing Romeo x Juliet, you know how much I gushed about "You Raise Me Up." Da, 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 da. This song, it is on that same level of power. You know, there are very few opening themes that have this type of power in them. And Toa no Hana is definitely one of them. So just 5-star song, completely sets you in the mood for the series. And it's one of the things that really helped make the series work, because it's a great opening theme. And then, of course, we have the in-series music, which is no slouch either. It's a lot of great mood music. It is kind of obvious. That's like the one criticism I think you can have of it, because it can be very loud. But again, you do have a solid story, and, you know, solid characterization and beautiful art, to where it's not so obvious. It's not like the music is trying to overcompensate for bad art or bad story. Yeah, that's when it really becomes obvious. When you have bad story and bad art and all of that, and that's when it feels like it's overcompensating. This is just a matter of it's mood music, so it's a bit more louder. And in my opinion, they probably could have quieted it a little bit and had it be more in the background than it was. That being said, there are times where it works being that loud. One is really the particular thing. I call it I always theme. Dun, da, da. Dun, da, da, dun, dun, dun. It's the one with the bells and everything, and the use of the bells and Japanese strings there. It's just a purely Japanese sound. It's her theme. And it's all sort of their love theme as well. And it just, oh my god, it works perfectly. And, you know, there's some nice little fun themes in there as well. And some other good romantic themes. You know, but at the same point in time, it's like, there's a theme that they do sometimes overplay some of them. Like, whenever they get serious, they play the more serious theme. And they kind of overplay it. But at the same time, it works as well. I mean, there is really good music in the series. A lot of it, though, like I said, is just a bit loud. I think a lot of it could benefit from being a bit more quiet in certain scenes, and maybe not so repetitive. You know, the other thing about it is they also, it's sort of a split, because you do have that sort of American style of mood music, but you also have that sort of Japanese style. Or should I say Japanese / Asian style, to where it's the use of, you know, quiet. There's no music. And it's using the sounds of nature and the sounds around them to be the soundtrack. And those scenes are just perfectly, the mood is perfectly set. So maybe it's not so much that it could be quieter, it's just I think they could have used a lot more Japanese style quiet scenes in some scenes and let the drama feel build, but mind you, if the thing I'm saying bad about the in-series music is that it's going to be just a little bit quieter, you know, it is really good music, because that's really the only thing I can find wrong with it. It's know what its job is, it's to set up the mood, and it does it wonderfully. So I really do like the music overall in this series. With the highlight, like I said, being Toa no Hana by Yoko Ushida, the first intro theme. Let's move on to animation. And, you know, the overall style is just beautiful. Great use of colors. It runs the gambit of the color palette. It's beautifully done. Each character has their own feel and really just feels unique about it. There are bright colors. It's never dark. But they contrast that by, you know, they have a lot of these bright colors and then contrast it with these sort of earthy tones and pale colors. And more importantly, the fact that regardless of whether they're bright or sort of more earth tone and more palatable, another thing is that all the colors are just rich. And that's something that I just keep popping in my mind whenever I'm thinking about the art, is there's a richness to the color. You know, the dark blue in Aoi's kimono that's matching with her hair. The richness in Karu's colors. The richness in Tina's hair and how that makes her color scheme work, and or at least the clothes that she works with. And so on and so on and so on. There is definitely a richness to the color. That you can definitely, it's sweet, and you can definitely feel it in the art. And just, they're really where the animation shines are these individual scenes where you have the characters in these great background shots, or I should say more importantly, location shots. Because it's not so much just this great background behind them. Sometimes it's just them, and there's the road pedal they're in down the street where the rose blossoms have bloomed and the petals are flying everywhere, and it just, oh my god, there's so many great, beautifully just iconic and just romantic shots that are just by themselves powerful. And that's one thing the animation just so much has it going for. It's just the richness of the animation. It's so fluid and so beautiful. None of the character models are jagged or anything. It just, to me, flows perfectly. And again, like I said, the character designs are beautiful. I mean, Aoi is just beautifully designed. The color scheme, the blue, and the sort of cherry blossom deep red that she has with the sash just works so perfectly together. And it's just this great look with the short blue hair. She's a, you know, she is the epitome of, I was going back to my Golden Boy times, and you all thinking like, hey, she has in a short while the society of high art, but she is elegance realized in art, because like that's the word I can think. It's like it's just beauty and elegance. You know, and she doesn't have to flaunt her tits to do it. She doesn't, I mean, certainly there are some fan service scenes with her. I mean, obviously there is fan service in this show. Let's make no bones about it. But, you know, for the most part, she is shown in elegance. I think a prominent scene that comes to mind is they are, in the first season, they go on the school photo trip, which again gets messed up. Teiko, who brings them around up the mountains, down the mountains, everything, and like, wait a minute, it turns out the hotel was just down the street, and then it turns out she accidentally booked the wrong date. She booked a year ahead of time. And of course, I come to save the day, and there's this point to where they all go for the bath, and they come in. Tina's the first one, and it's like, wow, she's too, like, oh, there's Tina, really well endowed. Then Taka comes in, it's like, I thought Tina's boobs were huge. Wow. I mean, obviously drunk guys. And then Aoi comes in. Again, not showing any cleavage, but just bows and just, there's an elegance. And the guys are just stunned by the elegance of her beauty. And it's like, there's a whole different type of cute. It's the type of beauty that makes guys gush. That's the type of elegant beauty that Ali has. And the character design there just works beautifully with it. Kaoru, I think, is a great design. You know, I really do like these character designs for harem characters, to where it's not always just... But second glance, it's like, well, I'll just make him skinny and kind of a loser and everything. I think the best male harem characters, like Kaoru here, like Tepe we saw in Princess Lover. I think we'll see another one next week in our next review. But to think of some others... wow, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. I should know his name, considering how much I love the series. But Nikki Springfield, our main character from Love Hina. I can't believe I am blanking on his name, and God, I want to hit myself in the head for that. I gotta move on. A lot of these sort of more iconic male characters, the reason they work so well is they have such great character designs, which is the point I'm trying to get to. And Kaoru has a great one. Hairstyle is wonderful. Just, again, he doesn't come off as, he has sort of male model quality of him, but he doesn't come off as this male model. It's that sort of almost shoujo look done perfect. It's kind of what they do with Hiro Yui and sort of the Gundam Wing Boys, to where, you know, they do kind of have a shoujo look, but the way they have the character act and sort of the clothing and everything, you know, it doesn't feel male modelish. Sort of the same thing here, really. I mean, when you see him put in the suit and everything, there is a male model quality that you can see. But again, it's... he still has that everyman feel, which, you know, everyman can connect to. One of the things I really don't like about his character design is his back. When he, you know, when he's shirtless and everything. Basically, the scars on his back. It's something that distinguishes him. And again, the fact that it's not just there, like, oh, we're gonna make it, so we're gonna give him a scar. The fact that the scars are such an integral part of the story itself really makes that aspect of the character design work so well because of how severe they are. I mean, his back is just cut up. And it's like, wow. It's this great thing that really lends itself to the character design because of something else, which is something we don't talk much about, but that is evolving character design. And something, again, that also happens with all the characters. Ali gets more elegant. And here, Kaoru, you know, when we first see Kaoru, first meet him, he has that every guy feel, but he feels like somebody that has the weight of the world on his shoulders. And as that series continues, as this series, mind you, continues, you see that weight lift. And, you know, and it's sort of a, he kind of slouches a little, but now he's straightened up. And there's that evolution and that continuity there that really makes the series work. So that's beautifully done. Tina, again, as, you know, it is kind of funny because really when you think about it, it is kind of what how they think of Americans because she's supposed to be American. And so it's sort of the stereotypical, well, they're blonde and long hair. And she's got a nice rack. It's typically what is thought of Americans. But at the same point in time, it works here. The stereotype, I think, works. Because it's not overplayed in any negative fashion. It's just who she is. And she's just such a fun character. There's really nothing negative I can think about it. And all the other character designers, I think, work very well. Miss Miyabi, again, as the manager, sort of the more mature character of the group. She has her own elegance about her, and there's a very maternal feel to her character design that I think works very, very well. Taiko is sort of the ditzy character with the glasses and the braids and everything, with the good heart. I mean, and that is one thing about the characters, outside of the two main characters, is all the other characters, you can see their stereotype, and maybe that's the one criticism I can have there, is that the stereotype of what they're playing, of the character they're playing, is very obvious. But at the same point in time, it's, I don't see that as necessarily a bad thing when they play those characters wonderfully, and there's more to the characters than just that stereotype. And certainly the story, that's something that deals with story, and it's done here with story. is that their characters are much more than the stereotypes that are portrayed within their character designs, which are done very, very wonderfully. Chica is just the definition of moe. You know, if somebody should define moe, well, moe is, you know, a girl, just a cuteness. And here's Chica as a definition of just cuteness. You know, she does something, you know, and it's just cute and adorable and just makes you laugh. That's moe. Mayu, again, that and you have these different characters with elegance, but each elegant is different. You know, again, there's sort of an that international elegance, you know, that be with somebody who grew up, like, in England is definitely there, whereas Ali has a Japanese elegance. And you can feel that difference. And again, it's in their, it's more in their clothing design and everything, you know, where Mayu has these more international dresses. And then Aoi is sort of traditional Japanese, and that great contrast between the two characters there. The overall flow of the animation, including action animation and everything, I think works very well. Most of the action animation is done in more comedic form. And so I think we bring special effects, because the special effects, for the most part, are comedic as well, but they're also used in serious scenes as well. Oh, just overall, the animation is fluid. It's wonderful. When it's done there to make a laugh, it gets the laugh. When it's there to be serious, it's very serious. Again, special effects. There's just so many wonderful scenes with rain. And, you know, when you have the cherry blossom falling and the shadows are wonderful and everything, and it's just, it's gorgeous. And then you go to the backgrounds, and the backgrounds are gorgeous. And mind you, I don't think I want to just keep this just the backgrounds. It's also location. And, you know, as I may mention, the locations are just gorgeous. All the different locations they go to, then you go to the house, and you never feel like you've completely investigated the house. There's always an episode where they're exploring a new part of the house that you're like, wow, how have we not been in this part of the house before? And yet, it's this big mansion, and yet throughout the series, they make it feel small in its own way. There's the college that just feels huge. There's all these different great locations they go to that just feel wonderful. All in all, I think the animation is a really strong point for this series. And again, overall, the animation does its job of giving a image to a great story, as we'll be getting to. Just beautiful animation, beautiful character design, great, beautiful locations. A bit stereotypical in some places, but again, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because they showcase the characters in story as more than just those stereotypes. And so they use the stereotypes to their advantage. So it works very well. So overall, I think the animation is just wonderful. With that, we are going to take a break, and when we come back, after playing some promos for some friends of mine, we're going to get into acting and into story. So I'll be right back, folks. After these messages, we'll be
right back. Superman.
Captain Marvel.
Batman.
It is 1985.
Robin of Earth 2.
Sergeant Rock.
The Legion of Superheroes.
This is the most eagerly awaited comic book event in 50 years.
Tommy Tomorrow.
Jonah Hex.
Commandy.
It will one day be called the greatest comic book event of all time.
Swamp Thing.
Wonder Woman.
The New Teen Titans.
The Haunted Tank.
Infinity Incorporated.
Worlds will live.
Green Arrow.
Worlds will die.
Supergirl.
The Flash.
And that is only the beginning.
The Justice League of America.
The All-Star Squadron.
The Huntress.
Ariana.
The Metal Man.
Firestorm. The Nuclear
the
Man.
The Outsiders.
Green Lantern.
The Blue Beetle.
The Crime Syndicate.
Warlord.
The Guardians of the Universe.
Tales of the Justice Society of America proudly presents...
And many, many more.
Crisis on Infinite Earths. The DC Universe will never be the same.
Coming January only at twotruefreaks.com.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
Imagine the world you have known all your life suddenly begins to change.
The changes are almost imperceptible at first, but soon everything comes crashing around you.
Past and present contradict each other. History is no longer immutable.
Inconsistencies begin to pop up. New origins rendered stories only a few years old null and void.
Those long gone are no longer dead.
Worst of all, your friends and loved ones are vanishing or changing.
The very fabric of reality surrounding the DC universe is unraveling.
In Smallville, Jor-El and Lara have returned to take Superman back to an unexploded Krypton.
In Metropolis, Superman is faced with a multitude of Batmen.
The time stream, made fragile by countless twists and myriad travelers, is now spinning out of control. Time is running out. Quickly.
Only the greatest heroes of every era and reality can stop this crisis in time.
And stop it they must, or the DC Universe will cease to exist, perhaps never to have existed at all.
The heroes and villains of the DC Universe are facing their
Zero Hour.
In 1994, DC published Zero Hour, Crisis in Time, a five-issue miniseries designed to fix some of the continuity issues that had cropped up since the conclusion of the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
This was a huge deal, and because of that, and because Superman played such a large part in that story, From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, hosted by Jeffrey Taylor
and Michael Bailey,
will be covering these Superman issues, as well as Zero Hour itself.
We will also be looking at all of the official crossovers to the series, in addition to devoting several episodes to the follow-up event, Zero Month, where Superman meets a brand new enemy.
Conduit.
Zero Hour.
Zero Month.
Only at From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast. From Crisis to Crisis can be found at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com, and is part of the Superman Podcast Network, which is located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Also be sure to check out the Fortress of Baileytude, which is located at www.fortressofbaileytude.com. There you will find new episodes of From Crisis to Crisis, as well as all kinds of fun bits of business connected to Zero Hour and Zero Month.
And welcome back, and let's go right over it. Of course, with AfterNet means it's time to go over our voice cast. First, we have David Layield, better known as David Winterman, as Kairu Hanabashi. You probably best have heard him. He's done a lot of those Travel Channel, Food Paradise stuff. He's also been the narrator for Ninja Warrior. Will he succeed and conquer the first course? We'll find out next time on Ninja Warrior. For those who've seen Ninja Warrior, done a lot of that stuff, and he's done a lot of other things as well. I was actually doing research, like, wow, he was formerly a writer on Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect. That was interesting, but he plays Kairu Hanabashi here. Michelle Ruff as Aoi Sakuraba. Wendy Lee, the legendary Wendy Lee, who we interviewed this past year at Otakon, is Tina Foster. Leah Sargent voices Miyabi Kagurazaki. Sue Beth Arden as Teiko Minazuki. Kay Jensen, a.k.a. Kali Walgreen, as Chika Minazuki. And Karen Strassman as Mayu Miyuki. Overall, I thought the entire cast list did a great job. There really, by the way, isn't an antagonist. And maybe that's one thing. Well, I shouldn't say that. There is an antagonist. There's the father, but he's not really prevalent till the end of the first season. And really, more or less, it's the real antagonist is the old ways. Though, sort of, it is old way in the fact that this is an arranged marriage, but this is an arranged marriage where the people are actually in love with each other. But the old ways are getting in a way in regards of, again, that he has to be of a certain family, and he's now left it, so now it can't happen. The same. There isn't really an antagonist here. So that's why it is, for the most part, there really isn't any antagonist to talk about. It's mostly protagonists. But they all do a great job. They all work well when in funny scenes, but I think where the entire cast shines is in the more serious scenes. In particular, David Layield and Layield. I don't know why he has that name. That's the name listed. Yeah, it's always one of those things I always want to ask actors. I mean, we kind of got that part from Richie, kind of, back when I did an interview with Richie Branch, and he kind of elaborated to why that happens. Why different musicians use different names. I think I may have asked that question this past year at Otakon. But it is one of those things where it makes it hard for me. But David Layield and Michelle Ruff, who did Kairu and Ami, are just steal the show as in regards to their voice. You just so believe in these two being in love, and they're just wonderful. It's interesting that Michelle Ruff plays two of my favorite female leads, considering that Aoi is one of them, and then she also voices Yoko, leader from Gurren Lagann. Again, I will say it again. The thing, I may hate Gurren Lagann, but it has nothing to do with the voice work. And I really need to get to watching that. It's been hard. I've started and I was struggling. But the entire cast list, Leah Sargent, which again, capturing each one did a great job of catching the stereotype of the character, but that's what made their serious scenes work so well. You know, Lisa Sargent was this very maternal character that was very, in turn, very overbearing mother, playing that part of Aoi, but in the more serious scenes where she sort of let her hair down, just great. Wendy Lee is hilarious in her accent. Again, it's that, like, well, she's from Texas, so, oh, howdy do, I'm Tina Foster, and hi-yee-haw! Not quite, but, you know, that's a, not quite as stereotypical, but still pretty much stereotypical. But there are a lot of good scenes with Tina to where she's a bit more serious, and those are where Wendy Lee really shines in those scenes. Same with Suze Beth Arden. Same, again, they play their stereotypical in the comedy of those scenes very well, and there really isn't any problem with that. But again, what makes it work is when the characters are allowed to be serious, and they're allowed to be serious, and those are really the best scenes for the voice actors. So, they do the comedy well, but they do the serious scenes better. And, quite frankly, Michelle Ruff and David Leguil, like I said, steal the show as far as actors, because they are the best all around, which really helps the series, because they're the two main characters, and they need to be the best all around. They're their stars. So, overall, you know, voice I mean, there's some things, you know, Wendy Lee, the accent can get very cliche, and I think for some people it can kind of get insulting, because it's that thing of like, is this what the Japanese really think of Americans? But again, it's playing off a stereotype, and I don't think there's really any harm with it, because, you know, it goes back to that idea that if you ask the world what's American, one of the common ideas will be that sort of Midwestern guy or gal, and that sort of Texas accent will come into mind. You know, the John Wayne, because again, you have to think about what has influenced the world about what is America. And a lot of times when it comes down to a country being influenced by what another country, you got to think of what the most popular media around the world that has come from that country. And from our country, you know, in particular when you think about areas of the world that have not had much media and maybe only could access older media, you know, it's John Wayne, it's our action stars and people like that. And, you know, John Wayne is big around the world. So, John Wayne, his cowboy movies, and then you have Clint Eastwood, his cowboy movies. There's a lot of cowboy movies that are very big around the world. It's kind of why Lone Rider, I think, did very well in China. Yeah, that kind of influences the world. It's one of the ways they look at America. And you have that, and then you have the big, burly black guy from New York. It's always funny to look at how America is a stereotype. You know, nobody ever thinks about how is America stereotyped around the world. Well, this is how they do it. But bar none, I don't have a problem with her. She's fine. This is more of a directing mix-up. When Mayu first comes in, in that first episode, they kind of go off and on with her accent. You know, she's English in one scene. She's doing more of an English, like, proper English, and I'm from England, and they're such a bore to me. And then it's more American English, and they go back with England English, you know, Old English and New English back and forth. And they finally set on sort of the elegant, classical New English, you know, more of that, you know, elitist type of, like, well, Mayu's here to be with Kanabashi, and Mayu will do what Mayu wants. And I'm glad they did that, but again, they're sort of messed up there directing-wise about what they wanted to do with her voice in that first episode she appeared. But like I said, it worked itself out. And those are the things, really, I can find wrong with the acting. You know, that's really nitpicking when you really think about it. But overall, like I said, it just works very well. As I said, they do a great job with the comedy, but they really shine in the serious scenes. And the two lead actors just shine throughout everything. With that, let's move on to story. I love this story. The main plot is just very simple. About these two people who, whether they knew her, or at least whether Kaoru knew it, he was in love with her. She had just, you know, the two people that fall in love. And they have to fall in love. It's, you know, those first four episodes, that really that first desk, really builds to them understanding why they fall back in love. There's this connection that was there when they were children. And he was really down that when Aoi comes, and again, just the death of her love brings him, arises something in him. And no, we're not just talking about that. And mind you, they, of course, they do play with that fan service. We'll get to that with comedy. But it is something to where, you know, he realizes, you know, again, just after a few days, what a difference in his life she has made. And it's something he makes a decision, you know, I want to explore more. And again, it is that series to where, you know, we're in love and, you know, it starts like, I don't know where this is going to go, but I want such a cute girl and, you know, I do care about her. And she honestly cares about me and it's, there's something genuine there that I want to explore. And you see that with his character growth there. And then, of course, their love, in particular in the first season, is about them growing. Like, I understand we were promised, and he's like, I do accept to want to be with you. And again, that all comes from the power of Aoi's love. You know, she has this... It's a powerful love when you have to think about it. And she spent pretty much most of her life yearning, wanting to be with Kaoru. And then she's told that it's off. Because basically, he couldn't take it anymore because the Hanabishis were just so horrible. I mean, really, the scene that I think really makes the connection work early on is the scene to where, you know, he gets sick and she has to... And the first time, she brings up his shirt and sees the scars. And we're really given the first eye view of just how horrible the Hanabishis were to him. And just how horrible it was to, you know, have to deal with, you know, losing his mother. And just the absolute brutality that was, like, who cares about that whore? The only thing good that she did, not that this is what it said, but basically the impression on the idea that the only thing good your mother was that she popped you out for us. And that you need to work your best as the heir, the family matters, and that very old way of thinking. And just horrible. It's like, the fact that he was able to stay with them that long was amazing. And just, and it shows you his strength, the fact that he's willing to leave. You know, he could have just did what they said and lived a life of luxury with a beautiful wife. But he chose to leave. Because it's like, I can't do it. I value people I love too much. You know, Kaoru is somebody who just cares too much about people and people he loves and his family. And he's like, oh, family triumphs your fam. And so on. So he left. And the scars that they left on him. And the fact that, you know, upon seeing them, immediately brings Aoi to tears. And this, you know, her saying, you know, I will be the one who will heal these scars. Maybe not the physical appearance of them, but I will heal the mental scars that these represent. You know, it's such a powerful thing. And that is essentially what this plot is. This is about two people so deeply connected in this bond of love that has been forged over years. Whether they knew it was being forged or not. That are so intimately connected to each other. It's about... And I think there are a lot of people that will sit there, and particularly say, let's make no buff about this. I'm not saying that all feminists would, but in particular in the way feminists talk these days, I would imagine that there would be a lot of feminists that would have a problem with this because they would see this as, well... Well, it's all about her dedicating and doing whatever he wants and not seeing the bigger picture here because it's a, well, it's based off this arranged marriage. Yes, it's based off an arranged marriage. But again, her love for him starts from his kindness that he shows to her as a child. She's a lonely child, and he's there for her. And then, from there, that love grows over years. And then upon hearing that he's left, she makes an effort to try to find him. And when she finally does, she's willing, you know, again, just to find out, not even care if she can be with him, just wants to know that it's not her, because she's so deeply in love with him. And it's just, it's such a powerful thing. She's willing to do stuff for him, not because he's a man and he's the leader. It's because she's in love. This is why love is such a powerful thing. And it, by the way, it's vice versa. They show him wanting to do things for her, wanting to buy stuff for her, wanting to, you know, do what he can to give her a better life. You know, yes, she was raised, yes, let's make no, but she was raised to be a housewife. But in Japan, being a housewife is not looked upon as being some sinful thing of the old ways. It's a choice. You know, this is why so many people who consider themselves anime fans do like Japanese culture. Because, again, it's about choice. There are women that go out and want to be successful business ladies. There are women that want to stay home and be mothers. It's a choice. And it's a choice men can make as well. And there's nothing that is frowned upon with that. You know, I don't want to get too deeply into the politics about it. But again, that's what it's displayed at. Aoi has made this choice. You know, she's going to be the one to take care of the home. Her choice, and she's okay with that. She's not forced into it. She's choosing to make that choice. And again, it's about that deeper idea of love. And then where the harem aspect comes from it is that's family. So you have the love that's being built and being with all these great scenes that go throughout the season. And throughout first season, there's a corresponding story of family. And that's where the harem aspect. You know, you have Tina, who's there, who has feelings for Karu, but it's just struggling with everybody, and Tayoko, and Chika, and Mayu, and the story, again, tied with Karu and things that he's done and how he's helped them in the past. And it's this thing of, like, they're together and they do stuff in their family, and they're always there for each other. You know, and again, it's, you know, Karu has such an acute sense of, you know, caring for people. They do kind of fall in love. Again, it's not something really explored in the series, just how deeply, they do explore how deeply, but they never go to the route that sort of the anime does kind of tackle. Okay, let me correct that. Or at least as deep as the manga does. Because the manga does a little bit deeper, but certainly they do have this, you know, well, you have the girls vying for him. But here's the thing. I think there are people that feel sometimes this series is of two minds and it doesn't know which one it wants to be. But it knows exactly which one it wants to be. The point of that comedy there is it also goes back to love. It's showing, can their love overcome, you know, the jealousy? You know, because in a normal relationship, I mean, think about it. Two people in that love, well, that would be a very difficult situation because there's a lot of jealousy. And they show that jealousy. But they also show how loyal they are to each other. And it's just another way of showing just how powerful their love is. And even, you know, even though he can't help be nice to the girls and everything, he's still extremely loyal to Aoi-chan. And it's just very powerful. And vice versa with her as well. But again, it also goes back to the point to where it really builds on this idea of that everybody is a family. Because while there is that jealousy, at the same time, Aoi or Karu would never want any of them to leave. Because they're family. And that is something that the second season definitely builds upon. And really is the goal of the second season, is to build upon that idea of family. That this is what these people mean to each other. You know, they go off and they do stuff. They go play tennis and the fun that happens there. They go off to a bath resort. They go on a summer retreat in the mountains. They go to the beach. You know, again, that's more first season. Again, that goes to the building of the... And, of course, there's also scenes where Kyra is even evolved. I think in the second season, I think of the swimming lessons. So where Tina becomes the coach for Chica's team. And that's going away from Kaoru and Aoi. And again, that death of the family. And just how deep it runs. And that's just... Again, that's an overall theme. Love and family. It just works so well. The second season, definitely the theme is more family. I think there's more balance in the first season between the theme of love and family. And by the way, how it's all connected. And again, that whole idea of the bond of family, the bond of Eishi, and how people are connected to each other. Literally, they literally talk about what the word means in one of the episodes. In one of the first episodes, in fact, it is the very first episode where Chica's trying to find out, you know, asking people, do you love Big Brother? And, you know, the hilarity ensues from that. Because it is such a... She's asking in innocence, but, you know, it gets treated as a very serious question. One thing I think that makes this series, in particular the first season, work so well is I think the pacing is done very well. You know, that first disc, very much like the first manga, is completely done in that one, that first part of the story. You know, and that's another thing that I think makes the story work is that really, that whole story, that whole first DVD, that in its own essence can be one sort of romantic story. And usually them, you know, winning over the mother, everything, that would be the end, but it's not. And then you go into that harem aspect. That then helps build the romance, adds comedy, and adds tons of depth to it. That eventually leads to the end of season one, where Kaoru has to confront Aoi's father and convince him to let them get married. Which, again, that happens in the middle of the manga as well, going back to what I know of the manga. But again, it's worked very well. And again, that goes back to pacing, because the pacing is done very well. The pacing in each episode, it never feels too long, doesn't feel too short. And part of it is, they do a great job of building to scenes. Because every episode usually is building to this one scene that makes the entire episode work. And they do it over and over and over again, and it's a formula that works throughout the series. And again, the reason it works is because of what the scene is. They do a great job of building to these scenes where they're in great locations, great places, and they allow the characters just to sit there and talk to each other. And it allows you to believe in these relationships. It's showing you why these relationships are working with these conversations, where they have a chance to talk and show why they love each other. And there's just this great honesty that gives you hope. It just fills your heart with glee. So the pacing, I think, works very well. Then there's the comedy. Now, like I said, I'm going to make no bones about it. Again, this is a harem. And there is, I guess you would say, etchy fan service. But again, it's very classy. It's never tasteless. Like, they don't show nipples or anything. I mean, certainly their characters, they're naked. They do the whole, oh my god, I walked in you while you're changing and everything. But again, it never feels tasteless. It feels classy. And again, classy and elegant as far as the etchy fan service is concerned. And there's other comedy as well. Though there is obviously a lot of sexual one. Because again, it's more of that type. I really do like the comedy because I think overall love goes through these things. And it's sort of, it's that situational comedy. It's very, I won't say soap opera, but it's very sitcom-y. type of comedy. Because, it's, you know, again, it does run the gamut of the typical, stereotypical comedy that you would see in a harem. But those jokes work because, you know, when done right, they work. And they are generally funny. You know? So I thought the comedy worked very well. There's a lot of very generally funny scenes. You know, Mayu and Tina just work well together. And this whole thing to where it always leads to Tina, you know, like a little kid going, "Manager, Mayu's picking on me again." And as somebody who kind of sometimes feels in the same direction to where I have a little sister who I feel sometimes get away with things just because she's littler or some, for some reason has more power over me, I feel her pain. Trust me, I feel her pain. The comedy just all works. It's all really well done. It's just elegant. And I think that's... There are two words I think I can best describe this series in final thoughts. Elegant and rich. It's elegant in its production. It's elegant in its presentation. And it is rich in emotion. It is rich in story. And make no bones, this is a character-driven story. And it's why the story works so well. Because at the end of the day, these characters are allowed to sit there or stand up, depending on the location. But be with each other, talk with each other, and it allows you to understand these characters and understand their motivation and understand exactly who they are. I love this series. This is an absolutely fantastic romantic series. And it's a, you know, at the end of it, I cried. I love reading that final manga over again. I love going back and seeing those first episodes. And it's just, at the end of the day, I love watching this series because it's that, it's a Hallmark series, you know? It's that Hallmark feeling like, you know, give me hope for my future and just make me feel good to see just two people just in such love. And I think, you know, when we talk about how women are portrayed in media and how relationships are portrayed in comics and all that, I think the one thing that we always forget is love. Is love there? Love is an important part. This is why I fight so hard for Mary Jane and Peter Parker, because I felt the love in reading the comics they were together. I don't understand how other people can't. I could go into why I think they don't feel it, and there's a myriad of reasons. But again, it's love. It's why Superman without Lois Lane just feels naked. Because of love. It's why there are all these stories with all these characters where it's hard to see them without another character. It's why I wanted to see Naruto with Sakura. Because of love. You know, you felt his love for that character because of the lengths he was willing to go through, even if it didn't mean her love would be returned. And you wanted to see her return that love. Again, I don't want to get too much into the Naruto ending plot, because I'll be here for another hour and a half. But again, this is the power of love, and this is the power of this series. It is just such an elegant, rich, and pure love. And I think that's the best way to end it. This is a great series. I highly suggest everybody see this. I think if you're an anime fan, you have to see this series. If you're a fan of harem and can withstand this type of comedy, watch this series. But even if you aren't, if you're willing to allow yourself not to be fooled by what society wants you to think sometimes in reviewing this series, you'll enjoy this series. Because I don't see how anybody can't. And I'm not saying that nobody can't like something, but at the same point in time, this is not about passing on ideas or propaganda. This is the only propaganda here is the belief and that love will conquer all, and just that propaganda of this true love. And you know what? I do suggest for anybody who is an anime fan, if you want to explore kind of what anime is about in its truest sense. I think this series is great. This is a series that beginners can watch, and it's a series that advanced anime fans can really enjoy. There's something there, I think, for everyone. And it's just, you know, considering we saw Oh My Goddess, which is great for beginners, we saw Princess Lover, which was for advanced, and now you have Ari Yuri Ayoshi right here in the middle. And it just worked perfectly. This is one of the best anime series out there, without a doubt. There's some execution flaws here or there, but for the most part, there's a reason this is probably the best love story in all of anime. I give Ari Yuri Ayoshi seasons 1 and 2 a 4.5 out of 5. As close to perfection as you can get. I just wish that second season was felt a bit more complete. And again, the execution things keep it from being perfect, but still, that's me being nitpicky. Because, like I said, if I give something a 5 out of 5, you gotta earn it. You gotta work hard for that money, honey. So, 4.5 out of 5 for Ari Yuri Ayoshi. And I hope you enjoyed my review of the show. If you have any email, comments, or anything you want to leave the show, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can email me at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact the show on Stitcher, where you can find our shows. Like us. Listen to our shows on Stitcher, on the Stitcher app, which you can download at www.stitcher.com. Like us, leave us a comment. There you can. And you can also find us on Facebook by going to facebook.com. Search for the Absolution Network, like us, and leave us a comment there. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And speaking of 132 Productions, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content right here, starting right here on the Absolution Network, where you can, of course, find my CM Juice Wrestling Reviews, Tom's Top 10, whenever I get to one of those and release those. The Intergalactic Graphic Review that I do with Edwin. Of course, you also have the Otaku Momentum, the Anicast. I know I've talked to the guys. I know they're planning to do some more stuff, in particular in Anime Boston. Hopefully. Of course, you have Shin Tiger Curl and his wrestling and video game and anime videos. You've got, of course, John Ramos and his voice acting and Toku videos, including Toku Apocalypse, among others. Check those out. We're all right here on the Absolution Network. And of course, you also have my other podcasts as part of 132 Productions. Of course, Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular website you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're on any of those sites, make sure you check out all our friends, which, of course, includes Michael Bailey and Views from the Home Box, which just hit episode 200. Congrats, Mr. Bailey, on reaching 200. And, of course, from Crisis to Crisis that he does with his good friend Jeffrey Taylor. My good friend Spidey Dude and the Clone Saga Chronicle site and podcast. Steven Slicker, the Critical Hit podcast. And, of course, my good friend Scott Gardner and the Tutu Freaks podcasting network. And, Scott, if for whatever reason listening to this, my God, congrats on you and Mike on the Crisis on Infinity Earths. God damn, that podcast was awesome. And just many, many more. So check all of that out. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, the last week of February, and we're going to go out with another classic series. We're going to go out with a Bandai series, in fact. Or at least it was released by Bandai. A series in which I have been on another podcast, a classic podcast you might remember as Hijacked. I may have been on it, actually, I think it was before when it was Hijacked. It was back when it was the Anime Roundtable and Review. Because that's how far back I go. Lucid Dreams. If you're listening to this, you're shaking your head. But next week, finish off the month of love with a look at Please Teacher. So until next time, my Tsunami Generation, stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off, and until we meet again, you know the rest.